My name is Mbali Noko, and welcome to the Mbali Noko podcast. I'm a farmer, and I created this podcast to discuss all things agriculture. I will be interviewing and having in-depth conversations with industry experts such as farmers, scientists, agronomists, agri-tech specialists, to policymakers and investors. Basically, anyone you can think of in agriculture and across its value chain. So let's dive right into today's episode. Ivan Kurbas, I'm particularly excited for our conversation, as I always am with every other guest that I have on the show, because there's always something that I take away from our discussions with a guest. And it just makes me so much more excited about the industry. And it makes me realize like phenomenal people that we have in the sector. But I just want to say this conversation, I have been looking forward to it for some time since I actually started the podcast, because I think there's so much knowledge that both of you can bring. And all the time you are interviewing farmers, correct? And it's nice for once to finally put the spotlight on you as media experts who have covered agriculture in vast regions. So thank you so much for accepting my invite. And it's a great honor to have both of you here. How are you guys doing?
Thank you, Mbali. It feels kind of weird being on the other side of the microphone. But we are privileged. As you know, we are big fans of you. We love what you're doing in the agricultural space, and nervously excited about today's podcast.
Yeah, we love, you know, as you know, we love sort of telling the stories of unsung heroes in agriculture. So we love your platform as well. So it's exciting for us to be here.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. So let's talk about Food from Zansi's, you know, tell us about how Food from Zansi was born.
So we always tell the story that Food from Zansi was never going to be Food from Zansi. It was initially going to be a three-month project. After I traveled as part of a television show, more than 100,000 kilometers across South Africa, interviewing the movers and shakers of the agricultural space. I remember at the time it was just before an election. And with a farming experience, we realized that what I was experiencing on the ground throughout the country differed from, you know, what we were seeing on the front pages of the time. Because I remember that the newspaper front pages at the time, they were very bloody and the politics were kind of dirty.
Yeah, definitely. And we, you know, Ivor and I have been friends for more than 20 years now, and also colleagues in journalism. So we started talking about this insight that he had while traveling and, you know, looking at these headlines and all these dirty fights going on Twitter and so on. And we realized that what he saw on the ground, you know, as an outsider from agriculture, and what we saw in the news headlines and maybe the kind of reigning perception at the time, you know, there was just such a difference, a contrast between the two. And so, and we also spoke about our own backgrounds. I mean, I'm from a small town in the Eastern Cape, but I don't have a farming background. I published Landbouwweekblad for a year. But, you know, I'm pretty far away from agriculture, but still as an Afrikaans, speaking white person, I almost feel a kind of ownership, kind of, you know, like I'm included there somehow. I feel a pride for agriculture, and we realized that Ivor didn't feel that.
Yeah, my experience was totally different. So there I am presenting this national TV show with people who I grew up with being told that they don't really like people who look like me, Mbali. I heard the little voice of my late grandfather say, the only good farmer was a dead farmer. And here I am standing in the rain, in the mud, between the cattle with a guy like Nick Sarfontein, who reminds me so much of my grandfather. I'm visiting Vicksburg in the Free State, where I'm seeing our farmers are building hospices, mm-hmm. Where people literally dying of HIV, AIDS, cancer, being taken care of by the agricultural community. I see them fixing roads where municipal infrastructure have long collapsed. And so we decided we'll do something. Yeah. We'll use our expertise in media and we'll start a project that's now turned into what? A leading agricultural publication in Africa, Quibus.
Yeah. So, initially we just wanted to put some shades into this black and white perception of agriculture, just to tell people that it's not only, as it was being played up, I think also by opportunistic politicians at that point. You know, it's not a lot of good people and a lot of shades of diversity in between, there with which we wanted to color in. And then I think when we started actually doing this, we also realized ourselves how much more diverse agriculture was and how much more diverse the people in agriculture were. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it kind of gave us this direction of becoming, on this mission to present a new face of South African agriculture that's a lot more diverse and that maybe doesn't buy into the old dichotomy of you've got established commercial and then you've got forever emerging on the other hand, and there's a big gulf in between, So our vision is to present a unified new face of agriculture.
Oh, it's so heartwarming to hear the strategy because the strategy that Foods from Zanzi has taken, because I totally agree, what you read in newsletters, in columns, in articles, paints a different picture about what is really happening on the ground in agriculture. And I say what you read in these platforms and it's always non-agricultural platforms, because I almost get the feeling that people just don't know what they're talking about. When you read these stories and see these really bad headlines in non-agricultural platforms, and I'm like, this is not really the case, because my reality on the ground is completely different. And you meet farmers, like you've said, Ivo, that are building communities, building hospitals on the ground. Why do you think the agri sector is given such a spotlight where they must always have just a negative perception or this divide? Why do you think people want to divide the sector in a way?
Unfortunately, my experience is that because of our dirty past as a country, long before any of us was born, the word farmer became entangled into the political mess. So I grew up understanding the word boer, which is the Afrikaans word for farmer, as somebody that doesn't like me. Where I'm from in Kraaifontein in the Cape, people still today don't call the police, they call the boere. When people, political leaders, like we've seen some of the EFF opinions, when they take the microphones and they talk about how dirty the boere are, when they're actually meaning white people, it's become sort of a blanket statement to identify the other. And it doesn't help that for longer than a century, South African media in general have been perpetuating this thing that a farmer in this country is a white Afrikaans male. We do this often. We have the fortune of traveling across the country, and we often ask people to imagine a farmer. Close your eyes for a second and tell us, what is the picture that comes up when I mention the word farmer? And they say white Afrikaans male. As media professionals, we were co-responsible for that, for big parts of our career, I think, both Quibus and I, because the stats clearly show, government stats as well as the agricultural sector's own stats, there are about 40,000 commercial farmers left, mostly white, but more than 2 million black people, subsistence, to commercializing farmers in this country. But yet we've been brainwashed for longer than a century to only see the 40,000 that play an important role. But by saying that, we are overlooking the great contribution made to food security by the other 2 million. Kobus, I'm not sure. How do you think?
I think I agree with you totally. And I think during COVID and the lockdowns, it actually brought another perspective for me when everybody realized how important that other chunk, I mean, the huge, the millions of people who produce food but aren't necessarily producing huge surpluses or making money from it, how essential that part of agriculture also is just to keep us as food secure as possible. So I think that was great in, emphasizing that farmer doesn't only mean commercial farmer, doesn't only mean white farmer, and also pointing towards how wrong the stigma that we've come across in like rural communities where sometimes farming is associated with poverty and with struggling to serve for survival. How that the other side of the coin also played into that divide to stigmatize farmers.
Mm. And there was Mbali traveling the country and for the first time being introduced to farmers across the country. And often it would go like this. Hi, Ivor, meet Pete. Pete is a farmer. The next day, hi, Ivor, meet another person, meet Tabu. Tabu is an emerging farmer. Then I chat to Tabu and hear, Tabu, how long have you been farming? And he says 40 years. I mean, it just didn't make sense, this label that we started using in agriculture, emerging farmer, as a code word for black. I mean, how long are you going to emerge? I'm a journalist by profession. 40 years later, God knows I won't be an emerging journalist. So we wanted to break down some of the stereotypes and challenge some of the perceptions that were out there, you know?
Yeah, and with your travels, Ivor, and with the stories that Food from Zanzi has covered, for those that aren't aware of really what happens on the ground in farming communities, tell us about what you've seen on the ground. Give us that picture, Ivor, that really demystifies this whole notion of agriculture as a very divided sector, etc. So what are some of the positive things that you've seen on the ground that farmers are just doing in their everyday lives and going about growing their entities?
Mm. Well, firstly, 20 minutes from where I grew up, I meet this farmer called Alfreda Mars, who's from Picketburg in the Western Cape. Alfreda is a third generation farmer, if I remember correctly, commercial scale sheep farmer, third generation Equibus.
Yeah, I think at least third generation now.
Yeah. And I did not realize that a woman who looked like my mother was farming. Okay. So firstly, that going on there and providing employment to people in this rural town. Then another big moment for me was when Nick Sarfontein, who is the chairperson of the Sarni Group. And he wrote this open letter that he first shared with Food from Zanzi to President Cyril Ramaphosa, who then appointed him on his advisory panel for land reform. And Umnika has been investing in the development, the upskilling of black farmers for 20 years. He's never received a notice from or thank you from government, and a lot of the money he put in from his own pockets, along with partners like the Jobs Fund, and nobody talks about that. And it made me realize when you say the only good farmer is a dead farmer, like my late grandfather used to say, who are you talking about? Are you talking about Alfreda Mars? Are you talking about Nick Sarfontein? Are you talking about farmers? The one farmer I visited, where the farmer and his wife, the impoverished community, literally leave their newly born babies on their doorsteps and they disappear. But they disappear knowing that this farmer and his wife have got big hearts, and they don't judge them. They understand that they cannot take care of their children for whatever reason. And then these children get new homes. I visited Kwesi Van Zyl at his farm, and it's like a Model C school right there in his house. Born and raised in that community, but then being looked after by this family. Those are just some of the heartwarming experiences I've had.
I think let's not sort of dismiss the fact that Agri is divided and that there's a huge catch up that needs to happen. But I think what we see, and also the stories that we tell in the For the Love of the TV show, how many people just have a genuine impulse to want to help other people, and to also who realize that farmers, Mbali, you would know, farmers put their money in the ground and they take the risk of leaving it there for a long time and hoping that they'll be able to get it back and maybe get some more, make a bit of a profit. So farmers tend to think long term, and these farmers know that they are invested in South Africa, they're invested in their farms. They want to see a country that works, a country with social cohesion where we're all kind of pulling in the same direction. So, it comes from their hearts, but also from their sense of, just common sense. And there's so many people who really just are good neighbors. If a new farmer asks them for help and advice, then they give that, or they offer to to mentor them and help them reach a commercial scale.
As much as you've shared, your experiences and the positivity that agriculture is doing in a number of communities, you just said, Kweba said, we also still know that agriculture is divided. Just how divided is it besides the race factor? You get a black farmer, you get a white farmer, you get a male farmer, you get a female farmer. So what other further divisions have you seen in the industry from your experience?
It's something that actually gives Ivor and I know, quite a bit of pleasure. Because I think one of our strong points in Food from Zanzi is the fact that we come from outside of agriculture. So we tend to see this thing with green eyes, with fresh eyes. So we don't, we don't see the, from afar, it looks like there's this huge monolith that's commercial agriculture. And it's a very important industry to South Africa on most accounts. And then there's this all equally huge in number, but not in maybe commercial value, the so-called emerging side. And somehow people see themselves, see the divide between these two as a wall, a solid wall. And we tend to not see that. And that's been where a lot of the energy for our project has come from. Another, if I can just point one more thing out that we have a bit of a pet hate for us, is the concept of the young farmer. Maybe I just don't understand the reasoning behind it, but you so often find people who are in their 30s and even their 40s, sometimes even to their 50s, who are maybe second or third generation, children of commercial farmers, who are not considered farmers yet. They will be young farmers till the moment that their parents or grandparents sort of pass the torch to them. And that it's one of those things that we find is a weird kind of a construct in agriculture that is seen as an absolute solid thing that we don't really see the point of, and it ends up it's we get a lot of those farmers supporting us and reading our stories. And they do so because they also believe there's a different way of doing things, and they're getting impatient for change to happen.
Mm. Unfortunately, when we travel, we also see the what's left behind of apartheid. And unfortunately, in a country like South Africa, it's not something we can just sweep under the map. I see the role of the agricultural sector and some of the stuff that went wrong too. You know, here in the Western Cape, there's a huge problem with alcohol addiction, and we see that playing out in politics at the moment, where our government has tried to protect the economy, for example, by enforcing bans on the sale of alcohol, where I can promise you the people that's going to end up in ICU and that do end up with a knife wound after being drunk, don't drink the wine that I find in Checkers. You know, these are the rural communities that have been paid for a long, for decades in this country with alcohol. I see it in colored communities of which I'm a part of, you know, the leave behind of that legacy. I see the divides in media too. Mm-hmm. We've got great agricultural media. My favorite magazine is Farmers Weekly. I love what they're doing and I'm a big fan of it. I like Landbou Weekblad. But when you gather at these big conferences, I can guarantee you, Mbali, and you do more of them, it's 99% white. We actively have to break down walls to bring in the other, to color in all the shades of agriculture that are equally important. You know, I'm a bit of a rebel. The Agricultural Writers Association, I know those people. They are the goodness of the earth. You don't get better people like that. But it cannot be that in 2021, the entire executive are white females. You know, what about the greater contribution of people writing about agriculture in different spaces and not just food for Mzansi? Mm. So open up the sector, and we actively doing it. And so is a new generation of farmers whose stories we're telling. And note, not just a new generation of black farmers. We see white farmers going against their parents and their grandparents to kind of break the rules and build a new generation, almost a future-focused farmer, Kobus.
Yeah. We like that term a lot. I think what we also find is part of the future-focused farmers is actually looking at their workforce a lot differently, you know, because there's definitely a bit of a heritage, sort of a political heritage there as well. And unfortunately, I mean, it's a very difficult dilemma, as we've seen recently with the raising of the minimum wage for farm workers. You know, it calls into question how viable are smaller farming businesses if they are that dependent on very cheap labor, you know. Mm. So, but the future-focused farmer really is thinking differently of, you know, of workers in terms of human resources practices, and you know, they are eager to you know, get the production value of new technology, etc. And yeah, so it's this. So they're getting a bit itchy to help take things forward further than maybe the previous generation was.
Yeah, I like this term future-focused farmer because, indeed, I mean, I've also met a number of young farmers who are purely Afrikaans-speaking and have different perceptions or have different visions and goals for not only the country but the agricultural sector. And we are a different breed of a generation. So, you know, there are many, many future-focused farmers, as you've alluded to. And with on the point of opening up the industry, you know, I agree. I suppose transformation needs to happen. However, even though you know, there's current individuals in the media space that are doing phenomenal things and really sharing stories about South African farming and agriculture. Yeah, they are doing a commendable job, but I want to bring the spotlight to Food from Zansi. You know, what type of, what, and I'm sure you've captured a slightly different audience, you know. I know you said you don't like the term young farmer, but let's talk about, for the purpose of this conversation, farmers like myself, farmers in my generation, you've captured us, you know, this type of audience. And like you've mentioned, it's black farmers, it's white farmers, pink, blue, yellow. You've captured the audience of this young generation of farmers. What other impact has Food from Zansi played in the agricultural industry since you guys have started the company?
Yeah, it's been amazing to have the Minister of Agriculture talk to Diza, call up Food from Zansi when she wants to share exclusive news to the nation first. Yeah. But we see it in amazing things when we tell stories of this new farmers, young farmers, which they are. We don't just like the term emerging farmers.
Yes.
When we write about people, some of their lives change. I mean, once a week, we write an inspirational story about somebody moving and shaking it in agriculture. Then Parmela calls saying, what's this person's number? We want to help them. Mm-hmm. Now, that's what it's about. How can media be used to open up spaces and to create opportunities for agriculture? I think we've certainly captured the imagination of the nation as well, because Food from Zansi has deliberately decided to mainstream agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
I think for too long, our agricultural media, which is great, have been preaching to the converted. We're saying it's great. Let's talk to farmers, which we do every day. But let's also make ordinary people understand their role and their contribution towards agriculture. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm having a beer, you know, a farmer planted that in the earth somewhere until it ended up as a beer of a bottle or a bottle of wine on my table, a steak. When I'm in the spur asking for a medium rare steak, I should know it's agriculture, you know, fresh fish at Ocean Basket, you know. Mm. It comes from a fishing village, a fishing community. Just the other day, over the weekend, Ian Paul, we've got this thing going, supporting local farmers. Our veggies are dropped once a week for 150 Rand, but it's worth much more. It's agriculture, and it's around us. We are agriculture. Quibus?
Yeah, definitely. And it's been inspiring the impact that we've, or just the kind of the way we felt young and, you know, farmers closer to the start of their businesses and their careers, sort of adopting us. And it's actually we've got this feeling of responsibility. I mean, we see we've got the audience, and we feel a great responsibility to give them as much value as we can.
Mm. And Mbali, to champion their causes.
Yeah.
The big thing we've got going at the on our news agenda at the moment is one farmer called Ivan Kluter, who is a successful land reform beneficiary. And I know, so he received land. He's been kicked off by government now off his farm, despite his success, turning it into a success story for the third time. And so we champion these stories because black farmers should be getting land. They shouldn't be getting 30-year leases or 3-year leases, and just when their businesses are flourishing, they moved around. That's the sort of issues that Food from Zansi wants to bring to the table and to hopefully in our lifetime see some changing.
Wow. And still on that thought of transformation, Grubus and Ivo, I know that you've also done a lot of trade shows through the early part of last year, or was it the year before, where you visited a lot of primary schools or universities, trying to open up the industry or expose the different opportunities that exist in the industry as Food from Zanzi. So as you're talking about all these agricultural associations, whether it's a writers club, the magazines, etc., they need to transform. And I know you've done a lot of work as well from a careers point of view to say accountants can also be in agri. You both are journalists from a media background. And you've also alluded to say, you know, people in media can also be in the agriculture industry. What type of reception have you received from all these trade shows that you've done in the past, highlighting the different career opportunities that exist in the agricultural sector?
It's been insane. The first year, we reached 10,000 learners in 4 provinces. And at Food from Zanzi, we deliberately decided not to just reach the ordinary bunch. It's easy if you're in a city or just outside a city. You reach of a university, a big company can get there. But the masses, the rural masses in this country, haven't been exposed to these opportunities, at least the ones we met. Last year, we had to adapt to a virtual format, already reached 20,000 learners in partnership with agricultural schools and provinces like Limpopo, Eastern Cape, for example. And it's life-changing. Some of the stuff that we've attended, different school events, I mean, I recall pictures of you with kids queuing, asking questions, you know, wanting to become farmers or agriculturists.
Yeah, definitely. And if kids, I mean, many kids, you know, you kind of see their eyes light up when they realize that farming and agriculture is not just about either, you know, driving in the front of the bucky or sitting on the back of the bucky kind of thing. You know, there's a whole lot of very attractive careers in there, and especially with the tech, you know, we at these events we normally have someone from the cutting edge tech side, you know, either drone technology or blockchain or something like that, and you just see kids' eyes light up when you kind of introduce different you kind of widen the horizon of what they thought were possible for themselves. You know, it's a satisfying experience. And I think, you know, we just try and get more people into the pipeline, you know, to get talent in agri in the next 5 to 10 years, because I think we're going to need it.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about Liefde van die Land, which is a show I believe you started, Ivor. Did you start that show simply because of the backdrop of the previous show that you hosted, or was it something completely different?
Presenting the previous show that I hosted, Landbouwweekliks, for an entire year, first 4 seasons, was a great privilege. And I realized through the Food from Zanzi experience that there are different stories to be told. I mean, there are 2 million untold stories out there. So we started Vir die Liefde van die Land to show a different kind of farmer, and specifically the mentorship relationships between farmers that you see in agriculture. For example, you know, the first episode were filmed with Samson Makhlaba. He farms just outside Rates in the Free State. And this opa started working as a farm worker in his teens, okay? He's now 40 years later retiring. He's only now making the transition to commercial scale farmer, no longer farm worker. So we will use our power in media and our inspiration and our influence in media to tell as many diverse stories of agriculture as possible. I don't think this country has even touched on female farmers. They're not getting enough credit that they should be getting in mainstream media. So there are many other opportunities out there. It looks like you want to say amen.
No, I just want to say, yeah, I mean, the TV show kind of flowed directly from the kind of work we do on Food from Zanzi. And it was also, you know, the VKB group supported us with that, as they have supported Food from Zanzi, you know, right from the start. They kind of bought into what we're trying to do with the with the website as well, Boots and All from the start. And, you know, they've got a very active mentorship program, which provided, I think, about half of the stories for the TV show. And, also, the show is being rebroadcast at the moment on VIA. It's an Afrikaans show. But can I mention the English version of it that is going to go out?
Go.
the English version of Vir die Liefde van die Land, called For the Love of the Land, is going out on People's Weather and Open View on DSTV starting in March now, Ivo.
Yeah. So People's Weather is a channel that's simulcast both on DSTV and Open View. Many people, it's free to air, have Open View decoders. And that's amazing to us to tell these kind of stories to a much bigger audience now.
Yes.
Now we're just not talking an Afrikaans audience or people who tune into Afrikaans channels for subtitles. You know, it's 20 times.
Like I have.
Yes, like you have. You know what I mean? So we're excited. The billboards are going up next week from everywhere, from Khayelitsha to Soweto. Check it out, people. It's an amazing, heartwarming show.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll see all the show details in your social media pages, which you do very well in, you know, communicating anything that's new, etc. But congratulations on this, because, yeah, like you've said, it's needed. It's to open up the industry to a broader audience, and that let's not be small-minded to think that the broader audience or the masses don't know about agriculture. A lot of people grew up in agriculture, even though we didn't understand that it could be termed as agriculture, like myself. You know, I'd visit family in the rural KZN area, and everybody's farming there, but farming for their own consumption. And it's only later that I knew that, oh, this is actually farming. This can actually be turned into a business. You know, being the typical Zulu girl that I am, for us, it was having a small kraal in the family homestead with cows, goats, and sheep. And that was for our human consumption, you know, our own consumption. And I didn't know that
it's farming.
This type of activity is farming and can be farming turned into a business. And so there are many, many people, rural areas, peri-urban areas, and even urban areas, because everybody has migrated, right, for work. And they hardly see these stories because agriculture is not in the mainstream media. So congratulations and for you guys to put agriculture in the mainstream media and really expose the phenomenal people that we have on the ground within the industry.
Thanks, Mbali, and amen to that. What a privilege.
So what's the strategy for the Love of the Land show? Are you going to be profiling different farmers that were being profiled in the Liefde van die Land?
So For the Love of the Land is basically the English version of the Afrikaans show. It features exactly the same farmers as a start. So the same farmers who most of the interviews were in English anyway, except it's presented for a very, very different audience who I think might be also susceptible to it. If I may go so far, I think that For the Love of the Land might bring us closer to the ideal of sharing agricultural success with the rest of the nation, Kobus.
Yeah, I think it was important that the Afrikaans show, because those stories also need to be told. You know, the stories of a new generation of farmers also need to be told to an Afrikaans audience. Mm-hmm. But I think with this, by presenting it in English and on a much larger platform, I think that's now, you know, removing the language barrier and opening it up for a much wider audience.
Okay. And how did you come about with writing the book For the Love of the Land?
So, yeah, we're both journalists and writers, eh?
Yes.
It's weird. We all have our little thing. And as writers, You always walk away from scenes, as you know, from television scenes, thinking that should have been written down for more than just a TV series. It should be living for hundreds of years. You know, because with writing, it's a lot more nuanced than just a television show format. You can get to layers that you can't ordinarily can. And I certainly see it with some of the chapters I've written in the book. I remember chatting to Quibus on the way back after spending time in the Northern Cape somewhere with a farmer called Max Mane, I think, Quibus.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, we wanted to have the space and the depth to tell these stories in a lot more depth than either the website or a TV show would allow us. Mm. And many of these stories are just really, they just hit a nerve with us. You know, specifically the Max Ndamane story, which I drove to Richmond in the Northern Cape to visit him and to do the story. You know, to really, all these stories will leave a lasting impression on people. And the book format was a way of, you know, getting the space and the depth to really tell those stories. And also, I think some of the stories in the book go a bit more, are a bit darker than we like to, you know, include on Food for Mzansi. You know, there are stories of people whose agri journeys did not work out all that well, you know. But we tried to really kind of present almost like a mosaic of different people and different experiences in agriculture to you know, as part of the effort to sort of enhance the depth of understanding and empathy that people feel for agri.
Yes. Yeah, it is unfortunate that as much as farmers are making such great strides in the agri sector, there are still dark stories, failed partnerships, failed collaboration, corruption from private corporations to government. I don't think as much as people would want to know so that they know that next time they don't get their fingers burnt. But yeah, those stories can be depressing. And I'm glad that you're deciding to focus on what's positive, what's moving us forward, etc. Ivor, behind, you know, offline, you also mentioned that you are releasing another book. Are you at liberty to say what this book would be about?
Yes, we can. Well,
I'm getting all the scoop.
Nudge. We love farming. We love agriculture. The book is called Heart Stories. I think it's due at the end of next month. We just signed off the proofs last week. It's a beautiful, beautiful cover. And it's basically Afrikaans version with one or two new things of the English book. So it's for a different audience. A lot of the book readers in this country are Afrikaans. That's another thing that we should be opening up the industry to. But anyway, that's a conversation for another day.
I was actually going to ask.
But it's quite hard.
Sorry to interject it, but I'm actually going to ask that, will there ever be a stage where everything is just one mainstream like language or information? Because it seems like if we keep doing things Afrikaans way, English way, don't we create a further divide in the long term?
I like to believe that government should be doing more to preserve all 11 languages. You know, it's one thing to say we are a country with 11 official languages, but can I go into Checkers and buy milk with my language on? No. You know, I would like to see a country that preserves all languages and not just do the mainstream thing. English in this country is like a second or a third language for most people. You know, it is the language that we all speak to kind of move from day to day.
Yeah, I think we definitely, you know, part of the diversity that we want to promote is definitely also language diversity. Because I think you're right. The mainstream, there's definitely a language, it's a bit of a language exclusion thing that lots of people feel in mainstream agriculture, and we, you know, we're trying to work to kind of soften that barrier.
Yeah. What's the next step for Food from Zansi? I know as in your careers, you're writing books, you're developing shows, but that's not under the Food from Zansi brand. So where else are you? What's the next focus for Food from Zansi? Where do you see this publication, the digital online publication going? And I know that you also have a podcast where, you know, we get to hear the farmers speak about their own enterprises and also interview people along the value chain and discussing, you know, critical points for that week that is happening around the country. And yeah, so what's the next step for Food from Zansi?
Well, Food from Zansi is a big, tiny publication, if I can put it like that.
In terms of
audience, I think we rank among the biggest in this country now, according to some independent figures now out. But there's still a country out there that doesn't know about Food from Zansi and doesn't know about the amazing work that our agriculturalists are doing. So it's definitely one day at a time, sweet Jesus. You know, that's all we're asking.
Yes.
to make a difference and to open up new worlds. We're big dreamers. So there are, you can wake us up in the middle of the night and there can be 2 million thoughts going at the same time. Some of which might be realized this year, some which might come next year. But yeah, lots to do, and we're hoping to expand on our projects as well. You were mentioning earlier our schools project. We've got a platform now called agricareers.co.za, because we decided we are no longer talking just to kids about agricultural careers once a year during a roadshow. You know, COVID made us realize we can do that every single day. So it's scary to see the traffic that kind of thing is getting. But yeah. Sure, that's a big question. Quibus, the future?
Yeah. I think, we're very excited about podcasting and also the reach and the potential of newsletters. I mean, I've started a new daily Food from Zansi newsletter a couple of weeks back.
I've seen
that. Yeah. We've also got some, you know, we've got sort of vertical newsletters based on some of the bits of the Food from Zansi kind of content recipe. We've got the Zansi Flavor weekly newsletter. We've got Stories of Change, which is kind of presents our feel-good featurey stories to a not primarily agri audience. You know, we kind of underplay the agri aspect and just play up the general human interest of the stories. So that's definitely two parts that we're focusing on for the next year.
Yeah. Just to sum up our conversation, what is your wish for the agri sector where media is concerned? What would you like to see media doing more of that is currently not there? And how important of a role do you think media plays in the agricultural sector, to be specific?
Media plays a huge role in just about every part of society. And that comes with a huge responsibility, because ultimately what media does, it influences how people see each other and how people see possibilities for themselves. I would like to be co-responsible for a media that where my sister's kids can pick up a media product, in whatever format that might be, whether it's TV, radio, digital, and where they can see themselves and see possibility, because that hasn't been possible in the agricultural space for the last 100 years. We've only started that. I'd like to have more media embrace the diversity and also to see the potential of using media to build a nation. I know it's not cool anymore to talk about social cohesion. Many people believe that kind of died with Madiba, but I mean, at Food from Zansi, we're still holding on to it. Mm. You know, we still see this rainbow.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's our our naive dream for Food for Mzansi, you know, how we can, I mean, Agri is kind of there where our divisions are very clear. You know, it's about land, it's about disparities in income, it's about poverty versus riches and you know, gender gaps and things. It all plays out so visibly in agriculture. But we believe that agriculture can also be the place where we start healing those divides and finding solutions for some of those problems. And yeah, so we foresee a media that helps the nation build itself up from the grassroots.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. It was a huge honor for me to have you on this podcast. And I wish we could have gone in more depth regarding certain other issues maybe that we haven't unpacked in the sector that is paramount to growing the sector, you know. And there's a lot more that Food for Mzansi also does over and above just profiling farmers. So, I hope that I'll have you guys again, maybe just to speak about the professional side of agriculture, you know, the different markets and the experts that you've spoken to or profiled in the industry, and what's their viewpoint? Where do they see the economy going? And what is it that they're doing on the ground to even support farmers? Because I know that you are having those conversations. So can I put it on my diary to say, you know, I wish we on my wish list to say I'd love to have you guys again, where we can really unpack the other side of agriculture, not putting a scope or a lens only on farmers, but for professionals that are really also making strides in the agricultural sector.
Thank you. That would be an honor if you could add it to your wish list. We'll add it to our diaries. We'd love to see it happen. And yeah, thank you for what you're doing. I don't think you get enough credit for your contribution to the agricultural space. Early on, before we even met you, you were one of the people we dreamt about, whose contributions should be acknowledged on a much greater scale, Mbali. And we are outsiders in agriculture, and I know many agriculturists feel the same. So thank you for that as well.
Thank you, Ivo. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the conversation. It's always fun, Bali.
Thank you, gentlemen. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Your feedback is always important. Therefore, please rate and review this podcast. You can follow me on social media at Mbali Nwoko on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, as well as YouTube. Should you wish to contact me directly, kindly send me an email at info@mbalinwoko.com. Look out for next week's episode. Until then, take care.